is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Final hour of Bob, Groz, and Tom. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. We got a big payoff coming up at the end of the show. Two tickets to the July 3rd Mariners game, the True to the Red, White, and Blue Fireworks Night. Mariners host the St. Louis Cardinals, so you'll have a post-game fireworks show. You can find tickets at mariners.com, so we'll be giving away a pair of tickets to that. Also, a reminder, this hour of Bob, Groz, and Tom is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We get a chance to talk a little more Mariner baseball with the man who covers them for MLB.com. He joins us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. He is Greg Johns. Greg, how's it going, man?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We were talking about, you know, we're in an interesting spot with this team right now where, you know, realistically, you're not talking about postseason. You're not really, wins and losses have become sort of secondary now. I feel like we've, at least Groz and I, have conditioned ourselves just to sort of watch the individual players and look at, all right, this guy's potentially part of the future. So you're more invested in what they're doing as opposed to the final score, so to speak. Have you gotten to that point with this team where you're looking at Crawford and looking at, you know, maybe Vogelback or Santana or anybody you perceive to be part of the future more than you're looking at the ultimate result of the game?
Come on, Bob. They just took 3 of 4 from the mighty Orioles.
Yeah, they are mighty.
We're basking in the glow of that. No, I mean, clearly this season is more about not just individual players, but specific individual players and the guys that may be here in the future, and which is you know, probably not a ton of these guys. If you look at the history of Jerry DePoto, you know, what you see now is not what you'll see next year and the year beyond. But there are a couple key guys there, and you mentioned a couple of them. Vogelbach, certainly, I think a big story this year. That, you know, I remember when they didn't bring Nelson Cruz back, everybody said, "Well, how can you not bring Nelson Cruz back?" And you know, the basic bottom line was we want to see what Vogelbach can do, and he's not going to play if we got Nelson Cruz. And those are the kind of moves you make when you're doing this. And lo and behold, given a chance, you know, he's put up numbers as good or better than Nelson this year, you know, and a lot cheaper and a lot younger. So, and I mean, that's what you do in a rebuild. So big step there. And J.P. Crawford, that we've seen here in the last couple of weeks, is a guy at shortstop, certainly, that can be built on going forward. So, yeah, I mean, those are the kind of things you have to look at because, frankly, it's going to be another 3 long months here if we're counting the wins and losses.
What are the other guys you're looking forward to seeing come up over the next couple of months, not considering wins and losses, but guys who've been part of this initial stage that should be ready to come up here in the next couple of months?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't think you're going to see a ton of the guys until maybe some September call-ups. I mean, I would love to see Jake Fraley, but, you know, he's just getting his feet wet at Tacoma. I don't know that they're going to rush him. I think, you know, the one guy we should see a lot more of here down the road is Shed Long. You know, I would guess that, you know, D. Gordon gets moved if they can move him before the deadline, and Shed becomes that second baseman. And he's certainly one of those guys you can pencil in there. But beyond that, I mean, Groz, I think most of these guys are a year or two away. The real key cornerstone guys, the Kelnicks and the Justin Dunns and the Kyle Lewis's, Nevin Weiss. And I don't think we're going to see those guys come up this year, except maybe the tail end. So, you know, in a way, this year is kind of the ultimate holding pattern, and I know that's frustrating for fans and kind of frustrating to write about, to be honest, because you're kind of waiting for those stories you can really dig into that they are going to build around. But, you know, I think it is what it is, and where they're going this year is you're looking at the Crawfords and the Vogelbachs and you know, Domingo Santana is the guy that certainly has shown what he can do. And I think those are the, you know, they've got to get some bullpen arms. I think that's probably an area we're going to see guys that we've certainly seen come and go there. So probably more names there, but, you know, Austin Adams, the guy that's kind of showing what he can do that they're pleased with. But, you know, I think this year is what it is. It's kind of a holding pattern.
Greg, can you talk a little bit about what they've done in terms of, I guess the word I'm looking for is improving the organization, because obviously it's about getting young players, but the key has got to be developing young players. What's the, in your mind, the situation with the Mariners farm system and minor league system?
Well, they've got better athletes now. I mean, they got some guys, and that's where you start. I think they're much better from what I've seen top to bottom as far as having the same message for guys. You're coming in, you know, they kind of look back at the St. Louis Cardinals as a team. When you are signed by the Cardinals or drafted by the Cardinals, they literally have a handbook, you know, the Cardinal way. And the Mariners are kind of trying to get that for themselves, and a philosophy top to bottom, and kind of the general terms you hear, that the control of the zone type thing for hitters and catchers. But it goes beyond that, and just how guys are going to work and develop, and you know, a lot of it's mental stuff. It's a lot of it's just training methods that they're implementing. A lot of it is the analytics, the Rapsodo guys, the stuff you can get to work on things, the specific how you're holding a ball when you're pitching out, how your grip is going to be affected by a slight change here and there. Much more into that than they were in the past, and most of baseball is moving that way, frankly. But they're they're certainly the leading edge of a lot of that, and that's what you got to be. I mean, you get the athletes, and then you got to develop them, and we've been around long enough to know that. There's been a lot of names in the past that have come up with the Mariners that just haven't panned out. And to me, that's the story of this franchise. I mean, they've got to do better in the draft. They've got to do better with developing. And that's really going to be the key going forward.
Greg, just looking at the roster as it's constructed right now, the guys that are up here with the big team, how many of them do you feel good about saying, yeah, that's definitely a guy I see being part of the future? Like talking 2021, 22, not so much next year. I don't think they're competing next year as much as Jerry is telling people that's the goal. But what do you think if we're looking 3 years from now of this group, who do you think's there?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I don't think it's a huge number, because I think by that time Jerry's going to have made numerous moves, and a lot of those young guys will be here. But the current group, I think definitely J.P. Crawford at short looks like a guy. And Malik Smith, they would certainly like to be in. We've seen in the last month that Malik is far more than Malik that they'd hoped when they got him. He had a horrible start, and I think we're kind of seeing back to what he can be at the top of the lineup. He's second in the majors in stolen bases, and he's hitting over 300 here for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and that's what they got to get out of Malik. He didn't even look like he belonged out there at the start of the season, but he's definitely settled himself in. Domingo is a guy, as good as he's been, he's only got 2 years of team control left after this, so whether he's here long-term remains to be seen. Certainly, Marco and Yusei Kikuchi in the rotation are guys are going to count on. Beyond that, Omar Narvaez, Tom Murphy have been a nice duo behind the plate. Just looking that up, those guys are second in WAR as a combo in MLB right now, which is a credit to their offense. I think they've still got some things to work on defensively, but certainly that duo behind the plate should be good going forward. And Vogelbach at DH. So those are some pieces. But again, whether they're all here in 2 or 3 years, I wouldn't bet a lot of my money on it just because how this operation has worked. And I know they're going to continue to make moves.
Now, a couple of guys you didn't mention in the rotation, Marco Gonzalez and Yusei Kikuchi. Do you think there's a chance neither are here, or what do you think of their future?
Well, I would suspect they'll be here because pitching is hard to get, and those are both young guys with 4 years team control plus left. I think they got to see a lot more out of Yusei Kikuchi before they decide to opt into the he's got a contract that can opt him up to 7 years. Whether they trigger, that's going to depend in large part how he pitches, and it's going to have to be better than what we've seen in the last month or two. He came out of the gates pretty good, but he's got some adjusting to do, and he seems capable of it. But that's a 2 or 3 year down the road decision that we'll have to see how he plays out. Marco, I think, is a guy you like in your rotation, and certainly a part of any quality group, top three type rotation guy. But again, pitching is hard to predict long term. So I like Marco. I like his attitude, and same with Yusei. Those are two real workers, two guys that want to be good and want to get better, and I expect that they'll work to do that. And I suspect they'll still be here if out of that current group.
One way you can get better, Greg, in terms of building up your farm system is with the international signing period, which is, I know, I'm just looking at the MLB story that starts, I think, on July the 2nd, and the Mariners are expected to be active there. Would you expect them to be active there?
Yeah, I mean, that's been their motive the last couple of years. Nuevo Marte, young shortstop they signed, is one of the key kids coming up. The Julio Rodriguez guy. I mean, they've landed a couple guys. It's in baseball. It's kind of the great unknown. I mean, you can
the last of the Wild West, right?
It really is. I mean, the draft has really become slotted, and even the international market now is, you're limited in how much you can spend. But as we see, I mean, that's how they got Kikuchi. They this franchise has always been pretty good in the international market, and I certainly think that's going to be a part of their future. They'd be silly not to. They got good people out there. But if you're going to ask me, Gross, to name a guy,
I'm not going to do that, buddy.
<Thank you. laughs> When they sign him, I go, ah, that kid looks like a nice looking 16-year-old, you know. And you hope in 6 years he turns out to be a player.
Yeah, I mean, because that seems to be a way where you can really augment your system outside of the regular draft.
No question. And they're pretty good in that. And that's an area. You know, I mean, you date back to Felix. That's how they got Felix. And it's been a long line of guys, international guys, I would say one of the areas they've done better, certainly done better there than they have in the draft over the years. So they've got to get that draft nailed down, and we'll see how that pans out here in the next couple of years.
Greg Johns from MLB.com is our guest here with Bob Gross and Tom. And Greg, hey, I'm curious to get your take on the opener, which has become more prevalent, it's more popular. We saw Tampa Bay sort of first brought it into play, and now the Mariners have certainly used it. I wouldn't say to much success. You know, you're very often they've been putting their starter into a hole immediately. I like it in theory. I'm wondering what your takeaway is, being as it's not been a great success so far with this team.
Yeah, well, I agree that it's an excellent theory, and I think the Rays have shown that, and a couple other teams have done it. You know, the A's have done some pretty well, but the key, I mean, I'm not making magic here with this observation, but you got to have good relievers, whether they're coming in the first inning or the seventh. And right now, they just don't have the depth with that bullpen to throw a guy in there in the first. And I understand what they're trying to do. And part of what they're doing, I think, has not been said a lot, is they've got four lefties in the rotation. They're kind of trying to break that up a little bit with starting a right-hander here and there. But the fact of the matter is, bringing a guy in who should be in middle relief for you and trying to pitch him the first doesn't work very well if you don't have very good middle relievers, and that's what we've seen. And five out of the seven times they've tried it, they've given up two or three runs, and you're down two or three runs in the first inning. That's not a good recipe. So my thought is, and I think they're forcing it right now. I get what they're trying to do, and maybe they're trying to use it like a lot of this year is to see if they've got a guy that works that way, and it's kind of an experimental thing and see how it works. So, you know, I'm not going to get all up in arms about it because this season is obviously not about the wins and losses, but I don't think it's a system that's working very well for them right now.
Is it something you see becoming more the norm moving forward in baseball, not just the Mariners, but just in general? That I know Gross has said on multiple occasions he thinks, you know, guys are going to be groomed to be openers, that it's just going to become a regular part of baseball. In the days of seeing, you know, the Verlanders and Kershaws and Bowers and people like that, Scherzers, where you're not messing with them, you're not going to put an opener in front of them. Maybe we don't see as many of those guys, and this just becomes more the norm. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, and I've even talked to some of the pitchers, and they'll say, "Hey, this is where the game's going. You know, we've got to move your feet if you want to be with the system. You know, you better get used to this." It's hard for starters. I mean, I think even the Mariner guys are doing it, LeBlanc and Tommy Malone. I mean, they're not going to come out and say this is a ridiculous idea, but I think they prefer to be starting. I think every pitcher would, if he's out there, he'd rather come in with his own clean slate. But you counter that by showing them that it works, and which is what they've done at the Rays. And generally, the Rays did it with young guys that weren't really, ready to, they weren't established. They weren't Verlander. You know, the guy that wasn't going to argue much if you told him he's pitching the second inning instead of the first. And they did see, there are clear benefits. I mean, if your starter doesn't have to pitch to the top three guys in the order and comes in and faces the bottom, and that gives him a chance to get through the order a couple times without facing, Mike Trout three times, instead he faces Mike Trout twice. That's helpful. It's not helpful if your opener comes in and pitches through, needs nine guys to get through the first, and you're coming in the second inning facing the top of the lineup again. So, you do have to have some effectiveness in that position to make it work.
Yeah, what stood out to me, Greg, is that I mean, this is the shift has been around since the days of Ted Williams, and it became popular recently. But this opener thing struck me as something that Tampa started last year, and all of a sudden you've had, I mean, I'd almost call it widespread acceptance that this is the way it's going to be, and in future years the way it's going to go.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think when they first started doing it, most people in baseball, including a lot of guys with the Mariners, were saying, "Yeah, that's great for them, but with the people we have, that doesn't really make sense." And that's the way most teams looked at it until it started to work. And it's a copycat league, like most. If something looks like it's going to work, people are going to toy with it. I don't know that it's going to be the. I don't think you're going to get to a. I don't think anyway. You're going to get to a point where a team is rolling out five straight openers, and that's the way the baseball is played. I think you're going to have teams spotting it, you know, where you got a guy or two in your rotation that might be better served in that system, and you give it a try. But the big point of it is you got to have a good bullpen, and that to me, that's going to be the bottom line with any team. And if you notice the Rays, pretty good bullpen. The A's had a fantastic bullpen last year, and it worked for them. So it kind of sometimes it doesn't matter what order you put your guys. If they're good, you're going to get results.
No, and you can't – I mean, you couldn't do it that way all the time unless you're going to really expand the roster, right?
Yeah, and even you know, last year more teams did it in September when they had the call-ups, and this is the last year of big September call-ups. So, you know, that's going to be a situation that gets limited as well next year. So they're going to expand to 26. They're going to have an extra arm, and we'll see how that affects extra position player one way or the other. But we'll see how that affects it next year. But
why are they doing that, by the way? Why are they limiting September call-ups?
Because most people don't like seeing the four-hour games in September with
fair enough.
You know, 12 different guys coming out of the bullpen, and left-hander, right-hander. So you know, baseball can get pretty tedious when you have unlimited players out of your bullpen. And some managers, you know, use that. But, you know, I think it's just a widespread idea that the game shouldn't change philosophically in September and just have suddenly unlimited players after you play 5 months under one set of rules.
Hey, Greg, if you were going to assign a grade to what Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto have done to this point, what would it be? As you could imagine, they get a lot of heat here with listeners and fans texting in about where this team is and what the players that have panned out and those that haven't, whatever. How do you think they've done?
Interesting. I mean, I would give DePoto and the front office a C because I think I think they've laid out their plan very clearly. And I think, you know, we see where they're going, and I give them credit for being open about where they're going. I do think it's a tough plan. I mean, it's a tough plan to sell to your fans, and it's a tough plan to pull off, frankly. We're talking about, they got a couple guys that will be part of the future, but you know, largely, yeah, it's you know, you don't know what you're going to get in 2 years, and it's not like they're flooded with guys who are 22 years old on the major league roster now. Right now, it looks like can't miss guys. So, you know, I'll give him Jerry a C and see where he takes this thing. He's certainly going to make his moves, and it could go anywhere. But and Scott, I'll be fair to Scott. I mean, he's been given a roster that's not going to win right now, and I think he's done a pretty good job keeping it together and keeping guys pointed in one direction. So, I give Scott a solid B probably most fans would say, what are you talking about? This last place.
You're used to getting that kind of response from fans, aren't you, if you say anything
yes,
promising?
Man. Absolutely. I just think you overrate what a manager can do, and he's got to work with the players he has. And, I always look back and Joe Torre was a horrible manager until he got to the Yankees, and Lupinella wasn't very good after he left a really good Seattle team. You know, these guys, they're good. They can be motivational. They can be wonderful managers. But if you have a team that's not built to win, you're not going to win, and that's just the reality. So, I think Scott does a lot of things very well, and I give him a lot of credit for keeping this group together through some pretty rough times here.
Who's the most impressive team you've seen so far this year?
That's an interesting question. Pretty hard not to say the Astros. That's a pretty good club. But I really like what the Twins have done. And I think, if you want to be an optimistic fan of what the Mariners are doing, you look at the Twins and the young group they've got and the athletic guys they got running around there and how they've turned that thing around. I really like the Twins. They're a fun team to watch. I would love to see them get deep into the postseason and see what they can do.
Hey, just looking at this Orioles team, and I tweeted out over the weekend that they're a perfect example of when people say, well, yeah, Mariners are bad, but it could be worse. They're a prime example of it could be worse. That is such a bad team, and they're not that far removed from a postseason appearance. I mean, you look at how drastically it's gone from where they were to 115 losses last year to, boy, they're on pace for that this year. I mean, I've not paid a ton of attention to the Orioles and what they've done. Is that just mismanagement? Is that bad control? What's happened with this team? Because they're as bad as I've seen in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think all that, they are bad. I mean, their pitching is really bad. And they don't have – you look at the Mariners, basically. And, you know, as much as I say, it's tough to see how many of these guys go forward. They do have legitimate major league players right now. And, you know, your Kyle Seegers and D Gordons and pitching staff with guys you've heard of, where you're getting that Oils team, and they're rolling out, which is largely a Triple A group, and their pitching just is not major league caliber right now, and they're wearing it. I mean, they're rolling out guys that probably shouldn't be out there, and we saw some of that yesterday. You talk about what service has been handed. Well, it's been what Hyde's been handed in Baltimore, are even tougher. It's where they are, and I don't follow them daily, so I'm not going to give you a super answer on that. But it's kind of in the last couple of years, they've just been in a rough shape, and they don't start seeing them making any quick upgrades.
Greg, you ever had a player start charging at you and have to be held back? did you read that story about the Mets locker room?
I have not. fairly certain that most reporters have not, and. I did cover Jason Vargas when he was with the Mariners, and Jason wasn't always the sunshiniest guy when he met with the media, but he was, you know, he was professional and did his job around us as we did with him. So I can't say I'm stunned that he was a guy that got into it a little with reporter, but things happen in New York. You know, there's a lot of reporters, a lot of guys standing around. Sometimes things get a little out sideways. So. Sounded a little ugly. I'm glad we've stayed away from that in Seattle so far.
Yeah, he didn't want any part of you. He didn't want that smoke. He knew what was coming. So,
yeah, most guys look at the old man and say, "No, I'm not gonna mess with the old guy."
Yeah, that's right. He's got sneaky old man strength. I'm not getting into that. Hey, Greg, good stuff, man. We appreciate you taking some time with us.
Yeah, always good talking to you guys.
Thanks, Greg.
There you go. There's Greg Johns from MLB.com. Covers the Mariners for MLB.com and. Interestingly enough, never had anybody charge at him in the clubhouse.
And I didn't know they were changing the September call-ups, and for a very good reason. Made a whole lot of sense.
Not to lengthen the games?
Well, that the games are long enough as it is, and why change the rules for the last month? That's very logical.
Fair enough, huh?
Surprising.
All right. Our thanks to Greg Johns for joining us. Ashley, who are we going to eavesdrop on here?
Little NBA chatter about some owners quotes. Well,
she's doing air quotes right now. You can't see it, but Ashley's doing air quotes on owners. All right, we'll eavesdrop on that. Coming up with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Bravo Golf Tango. Bravo Golf Tango. The line is in. It's time now for the eavesdrop.
It is time for the eavesdrop here with Bob Gross and Tom. We take a listen to something somebody said somewhere about stuff. By the way, I just retweeted one of the funniest videos I've ever seen.
Well, especially with your yes. I'll just say it's very funny. But not everyone might think it's that funny.
It's pretty funny. Come on.
I think it is.
Stacey Ross tweeted it. She sent it to me, and I had to thank her for it because it was just... hilarious, but check. Did you see it, Ashley?
I was like, tell the people what it is.
Well, it's
what's
a
the video?
It's a little kid who's sitting on a slide or something, and he's got like a little baby.
Peter Totter, a slide, you're right.
Yeah, some toy. He's sitting out there and he's crying, and he's got like a little frog on his arm, like a little teeny baby frog, like on his arm, and he's, I guess, afraid of it. And the person who's videotape recording him, like, kind of moves it, like, I guess, to try to brush it off his arm. But it hopped up onto his face.
Right by his mouth. That,
yeah,
right
no.
by his mouth. And the
he
kids
starts
just
screaming.
I'm pretty, a bad person. What do you want me?
It's funny.
It is very funny. You got to check it out. It's
funny.
Nobody was hurt. Everything's okay.
Except the boy's dignity.
Oh, no, watch it first and tell me you didn't laugh.
The boy is scarred for life. He's going to hate frogs. He's not going to be sure why.
Oh, Stacy made my day. It was great. But it's up there at Bob Stelton. You can check it out and see if I'm just a horrible person or if you think it's funny. I think it's hilarious. Anyway, all right. Moving on. Oh, by the way, a reminder, this hour of Bob Gross and Tom is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. And we've got the big payoff coming up here. Ashley's got a question for you shortly, so make sure you're paying attention. Now, we're going to eavesdrop on a couple guys talking about a term being used in the NBA. Curious to get your
term.
Take Yeah, here's well, here's Adam Silver talking about it, and then we'll give you a little bit from Mark Cuban. Here's Adam Silver.
Good afternoon, Adam. How are you?
I'm great.
So, congratulations on the season done. Another season, and you've got to come out. So I got to ask you. So the 76ers owner moved away from the term owner and now goes managing partner, right? Do you see that happening more in the NBA? Do you like the idea that moving away from that term owner?
I do. I don't want to overreact to the term because, as I said earlier, people end up twisting themselves into knots, avoiding the use of the word owner. Yeah. But we moved away from that term years ago with the league. We call our team owners the governor of the team and alternate governors. But so I think it makes sense. As I said, I don't want to overreact, and you'll find the word throughout memos over the past decade in the NBA, but I'm sensitive to it, and I think to the extent teams are moving away from the term, we'll stick with using governor.
Have you had positive feedback from some of the players and whatnot from this?
Yeah, players have gone both ways. I think a few players have actually spoken out and saying the greatest thing that ever happened was when Michael Jordan was able to call himself an owner. But of course, Draymond Green has been very public about the fact that we should be moving away from the term, and I completely respect that.
But, you know, it being 2019, whatnot, you know, maybe other sports will start taking suit towards it.
To each his own.
You know who I thought that was?
Who?
I thought that was a guy from the Howard Stern show.
Which one?
The guy asking him the question struck me as a whole line of Howard Stern stuff.
Like you thought it wasn't serious?
Yeah.
Apparently it is. Is this a thing? Is there some outrage over
Draymond Green? I saw said something about it.
What are we doing? You own the team. You bought the team. You invested millions, billions into this product. You are the owner of the team. You're the majority owner. You're a minority owner.
You're paying the players.
You own a company. You own a construction company. You're the owner of the company. You own a restaurant. You can put your name on it, call it Graz's Place.
This
He's the owner.
Political correctness run amok in my
This
opinion.
Is ridiculous. It's absurd. I'm sorry. It is
don't
absurd.
Be sorry. It's ridiculous.
Are there
are
really
an owner,
people getting.
And by the way,
there are people getting bunched up over an owner of a team being referred to as an owner?
Draymond Green. The NFL will never change that, by the way.
Nor should they. Nor
they
should
owners.
They. Where's the rub here? Where's the insult? I don't get it. I don't get what's happening.
They own the team.
Thus, they are the owner.
Right. I don't get it either.
Somebody owns this company. Somebody's an owner here.
Yep.
All right. Here's Mark Cuban was weighing in on this. Here's what he had to say.
Now, ownership.
Uh-huh.
There's a big topic. They're trying to get rid of the ownership.
Oh, the terminology? Yeah, I mean, it's not that big a deal, but you know what? If you run a company, own a company, start a company, you decide.
I liked him in Billions, by the way.
Yeah.
That was a nice little cameo.
Yeah, such a good show. I don't know, man.
It's run amok.
Are we just now seeking out things to express phony outrage?
Well, sounds like it's not that.
I've got to be offended by something.
People can have outrage. It's just the fact that everyone's supposed to feel it that bothers me.
I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't know. I'm not sure why now that's a thing. Why is that a thing? They own the team. They own the team.
What
do you want to call them a managing partner? Does that make you
or
feel better?
Governor.
How does this hurt somebody's feelings?
Semantics.
I don't get it.
I would just call him the boss.
Is that going to be a problem at some point? Is that going to be an offensive term of 5 years from now?
Most people Probably. Have a boss, so I just call it the big boss.
I don't know. Somebody's saying we're owned by Disney. We're not. We're not owned by ESPN. We're an affiliate.
Right.
We're not owned by ESPN, which is owned by Disney. I don't know. Owning a business does not equate to owning the employees. The NBA players are bristling over the implication that the owner owns the play. He owns the team. He can do what he wants with the team. He can trade you. He can cut you. He can sign you to an extension. It's completely up to him.
It's such a ridiculous discussion, in my opinion. It's the sort of thing that drives me nuts, and it distracts from real world things. To find stuff to be offended about, that's not offensive. It's just not offensive.
I haven't heard what Draymond Green has said about it or what his position on it. Obviously, he's against it. But I haven't heard his rationale for it.
I haven't either. I just saw that he brought it up.
Yeah. I apparently, if you own a business, you're not to call yourself the owner. All right. I was completely unaware that that's offensive and we're out of touch, apparently. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think everyone feels that way.
I wouldn't think so.
Let's see if I can see the story.
Yeah. Somebody texting in, I suppose it's not ideal to have the word owner associated with an industry that is predominantly African American, but it doesn't change the dynamic. You purchased a team. You purchase a car. You purchase a home. I am a homeowner, a car owner. I own this team. You put yourself on the line financially. I think it's okay to say, well, you're the owner of said product, whether it's a team, whether it's a house, a car, whatever it is. I don't get it. Yes, you have employees. There are people that work for you that support this business that you own. I don't think anybody's demeaning anybody by saying, yes, I employ this person. I employ this person. They're all part of this big machine here.
Green weighed in on the topic during an episode of HBO's The Shop last year. Last year, Jon Stewart was the one who raised the idea of owner's label being problematic due to basketball and other sports being purely the labor of people. Draymond agreed. You shouldn't say owner. When you think of a basketball team, nobody thinks of the bleeping Golden State Warriors. I think of that damn bridge. I think of the players who make the team. You don't even know what the bridge is called. I don't know what he's talking about there.
Okay.
Just because someone was taught 100 years ago doesn't make it the right thing today. When you look at the word owner, it really dates back to slavery. The word owner, master, it dates back to slavery. We just took the words and continue to use them.
All right. Well, help yourself if you're upset by that. I don't see that changing.
The NBA, it sounds like it's going to change.
Well, all right, whatever. That's going to make everybody feel better about it. Help yourself. I mean, I feel like you're really searching for things to be upset about.
I agree with you.
Nobody's saying you own this person. You own the team.
Right.
You own the Golden State Warriors. You own the Boston Celtics. You own whatever. Nobody's saying I own you as an employee. No, I've signed you to help, and you're compensated in a ridiculous fashion to live a lifestyle that most people dream of. Right?
Yeah.
So let's not pretend people are put upon here, that somehow this term is demeaning and they're being treated unfairly. He owns the team.
And like you said, any business person has an owner.
Yeah. So are restaurant owners not supposed to call themselves owners now because they have people working in the restaurants, servers and cooks? And
actually, I'm trying to think of a company where the owner doesn't have employees who do it's called labor.
Yeah, construction company, whatever. I don't get it. I feel like we're really searching in a very hard fashion to find things to be upset about or offended by.
Well, to me, it's just trivial nonsense. It's a waste of time and effort and energy. When we got enough problems going on here, now we're worried about semantics, these kind of semantics.
I guess. Help yourself. All right. Anyway, let's move on to a big payoff here. Hopefully that's not. Is the word payoff, is that bad? Can we use that?
No, I think we're all right.
All right. We're still good with that. Let me know when that becomes offensive.
Smashley's got us.
She's got a question. On the line, two tickets to the July 3rd Mariners game. It's the True to the Red, White, and Blue fireworks night. When the Mariners host the St. Louis Cardinals, the Mariners will light up the sky with a post-game fireworks show. You can find tickets at mariners.com. The big payoff question is,
in the 12:30 segment of This or That, which Mariners shortstop did both Bob and Graz prefer?
All right, we were given a choice. We both agreed on said choice. What was it? Who was it? If you know the answer to that, 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. We'll come back with our winner, and we will sum it all up next with Bob, Graz, and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time to sum it up with Bob, Graz, and Tom. The final word every day on the show of record at 2:45.
All right, time for the big payoff. In case you missed it, on the line, two tickets to the July 3rd Mariners game. It's the True to the Red, White, and Blue fireworks night. Mariners will host the St. Louis Cardinals, light up the sky with a post-game fireworks show. You can find tickets at mariners.com, or you win them here by answering this question correctly. The question was,
in the 12:30 segment, This or That, which Mariners shortstop did Bob and Graz both prefer? The answer was Gene Segura. It's between Segura and J.P. Crawford and Jacob from Bellevue.
There you go.
Scored some tickets.
Congrats, Jacob. Enjoy the game. And that's based on who they are currently.
It was 2018 Segura versus what we've seen so far from Crawford.
Yeah, which is a very small sample set. I like what we've seen from Crawford. I really like the potential
he's
showing.
No, this is not a shot on him. Segura was an all-star that year.
Yeah, this is a guy who's had extremely limited time at the big league level in Crawford. So I like where he's going, but if you're just comparing what you know somebody's achieved at this level in both leagues, by the way, I give Segura credit for leading the NL in hits, coming over here and picking up right where he left off. Apparently, it was a problem in the clubhouse a bit, but just if we're just talking about a player, right now you'd have to lean towards Segura. And as you said, I don't think it's close.
No.
Right?
Not, and again, nothing against Crawford, who had a terrific weekend.
Yeah.
Terrific game in particular yesterday.
Yeah, what, 4 for 4, drove in four. I think he had a good game before that, too, the game before or somewhere in this. He's been great. I mean, he's been, you know, for the month, you know, I know he's only been back for a little while, but his June numbers, .333 average, a .394 on base percentage, scored 7 runs, 13 hits, 11 runs driven in.
Segura's hitting .268 with 7 home runs for the Phillies.
Really?
Yeah.
It's down from what he was doing here.
Yeah, a little bit.
But, yeah, all right. There you go. So enjoy the game. Meanwhile, there hasn't been much in the way of NFL news in terms of talking Seahawks.
In fact, even talking to Clayton before the show, no big bust yet or anything. People have kept their noses clean so far. That's normally the news that comes around now.
There's still a few weeks.
Oh, there's 5 or 6. There's still plenty to go wrong.
What would the over-under number on stories of somebody getting in trouble be? Would you say 4? Or 3.5?
More than that.
5.5? Between now and the start of... Double digits. Between now and the start of training camp.
Every team?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Total number, whether it's just, hey, this guy was most out the street screaming.
I think a better question would be, what teams will not have any stories?
So you think most teams will have somebody that screws up between now and the beginning of training camp?
I do.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never really paid...
Over under 16.5.
I'll take the under.
I'll keep track of it.
Okay. Starting today, if we hear about somebody getting busted for something or getting into an argument with their significant other or something along those lines. But
right. Getting in trouble.
Getting in some sort of trouble that makes headlines.
Right.
Okay. You're 16.5, you say?
Yeah.
All right. I'll take the under. I've never really – it feels like obviously this is that time, and that's why they worry so much about it, because this is when a lot of that happens.
Mm-hmm.
I've never – I'm sure Clayton's got a database. He's probably got it.
That's what I'll be counting on for the information. Something I'll ask him every day when we do our little crosstalk.
Yeah, he'll be, well, between this time last year and the start of training camp, there were 37 people.
You know, he knows.
So he's probably charted it, and he would know better than I would. I've never truly paid attention to the numbers.
We're going to this year.
Do you think the Seahawks will have anybody? You said that the better question would be the teams that didn't. So Patriots would be a team you'd bet against somebody getting in trouble, right?
I don't know if you can do it by team.
Well, you said that was your question, like which teams wouldn't have somebody.
Yeah, you're saying the Patriots.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think the Seahawks probably wouldn't. But the Seahawks had one of the ultimates.
Yeah. Yeah, Malik McDowell. Yeah. You've had Jeremy Lin get into problems. I mean, it's...
It's hard for me to do it by team. I'm just talking about the overall number.
Okay.
Sometimes you don't know you got a knucklehead until he shows his true colors.
Until they act like a knucklehead.
Right.
Right. So, I certainly hope it's not the Seahawks. And yeah. I'm not looking for guys to get in trouble.
They've had a nice, smooth offseason so far.
They really have. There's been very little that's gone on. I mean, they're, you know, right now you're
very little bad that's gone on. Actually, they've had a lot going on. I mean, Russell Wilson was huge.
Yeah, but no real negativity or anything?
No, it's been very good. Knock on wood.
Let's keep it that way, yeah?
Yes.
All right. All right, there we go. That does it for us. I want to thank our guest today, Greg Johns and Maura Dooley, the Combine Queen.
Yeah, Maura was great.
She was great. Did a great job at the XFL Combine over the weekend. If you missed any of today's show, just go to 710sports.com, click that podcast button, scroll down to our picture and click on that. Everything you miss each and every day is waiting right there for you. We'll be back with you tomorrow right here with Bob Gross and Tom.
A role play group? What would a role play group? What would... Thank you.